Okay, everyone, yes, so if we could have our Bibles open at Ecclesiastes, always helpful. We are near the end of our time in this Old Testament book, and just one more week after this. And I remember actually beginning the book of Ecclesiastes in a freezing cold school hall at Ralston, the first Sunday in January. And the man whose voice we've sort of grown to know very well over the last few months, a man called the Teacher, opened this book with these words. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." And here we are, 2 months later, listening to the teacher's closing words in the book. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Everything is meaningless." Have we gotten anywhere in the last 2 months? You might be asking. Well, actually, I hope if you have been here at all the last few months, you'll see the teacher's actually taught us a great deal in this book about the world we live in, about our lives in that world, and about what wisdom or living well in this world looks like. And his favorite word throughout the book is the word that's translated meaningless in the NIV. It's the Hebrew word hevel. It's a word he uses 38 times in this book. And we suggest throughout this series, maybe a better translation of hevel is to say it's a breath or a vapor. So the merest of breaths, says the teacher, the merest of breaths, everything is a breath. So what does the teacher want us to see as he confronts us with this word, hevel, this breath existence throughout the book? Well, he wants to see that life in this world under the sun is a breath. It is here today, gone tomorrow. It won't last, and because it won't last, it will always involve a measure of frustration and pain. Because we will be forced to say goodbye to people and to experiences and things in our life that we would love to last forever, but they don't. And they never do. Because everything is a breath, the teacher tells us. And what is the great proof, if you like, the greatest evidence that our lives are a breath in this world? Well, the teacher kind of comes to this at the end of this book. Because he basically shows us, how do we know our lives in this world are a mere breath? The answer we get here is that most of us will grow old and all of us will die one day. That's where the teacher wants to leave us at the end of this book. Next week, when we come to the last bits of chapter 12, that's not the teacher speaking, that's someone who has gathered the teacher's words. We'll look at that next week. But the teacher begins his book declaring that everything's a breath. He ends his book saying everything's a breath. And we might think, well, Ecclesiastes really is as grim and pessimistic as some people say it is. But actually, again, I hope if you've been here at all, you'll say, actually, no, that's not the case. The message of this book, life is short. Life is a breath. But because life is short, live it well, says the teacher. Again and again here, he says, remember the God who made you. Verse 1 of chapter 12, remember your creator in the days of your youth. Verse 6, remember him. The teacher wants to see that life only makes sense if you receive it as a gift from the God who made you. A gift that is yours for a while. It will not last forever in this world. But actually, it's a gift from a loving God who wants you to know him. Again, I hope we've seen throughout, in spite of initial appearances, Ecclesiastes is a wonderfully life-affirming book. And to live life well in this world, we learn, as we come to the end of this book and the teacher's words, we need to remember God and live life to the full. That's where he's going in this closing bit with his voice. So looking at chapter 11, verse 7 onwards. So chapter 12, you'll have seen, is this very moving reflection on what it feels like to grow old. But the teacher doesn't start there. He starts in the second half of chapter 11 celebrating life. And he urges his readers to celebrate life too. Again, throughout these chapters, his mantra really is remember God and live life to the full. Looking at verses 7 to 8 of chapter 11 for a second. It says this, light is sweet and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. But let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Everything to come is a breath. Teacher says that the key to enjoying life is enjoy life for what it is. He doesn't want us to have any illusions about life, any misguided thunder signs that we're going to live forever or that life will ultimately satisfy us completely. But if we see our lives, what they really are, we're then ready to enjoy them as a gift from God. And again, what does the teacher want us to see about our lives? Well, again, we've already seen your life's a breath, he says. It's short. Everything to come is a breath, verse 8. Verse 10, youth and vigor are a breath. Your life won't last forever. Life is short. And equally, your life will be a mixture of light and darkness. Light is sweet, says the teacher in verse 7. There'll be days of light in your life. Enjoy them, he says. But there'll also be days of darkness. And he's very honest. They may be many, he said. There will be many days of darkness, verse 8. And that's so helpful for us because in our culture, we kind of believe that maybe there's a way we can protect ourselves and the people close to us from anything bad happening. We somehow have the power to keep days of darkness away from us if we just follow the right advice, if we eat the right food, if we exercise the right amount, if we wash our hands for 20 seconds, if we do various things, we will keep the days of darkness at bay. But see, the teacher never lies to us because God and his word never lies to us. He never promises that our lives will be spared from hardship or pain if we trust in God. He's brutally honest with us. But actually assures us if we remember God, those days of darkness are never strong enough to overcome or overwhelm the fact that life actually is a gift from a good and loving God who calls us to trust in him. Verses 9 to 10, your life is a gift from God to be enjoyed. Enjoyment actually is at the heart of this closing section. So as with all Old Testament wisdom, the teacher imagines himself, he's an older man speaking to younger people. He's speaking to the young here. And in the Bible, wisdom is something that you must pass on to those who are younger than you. Incidentally, that's really at the heart of Christian parenting. That's at the heart of all Christian youth and children's work. We've got to tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. That's what we're committed to doing at Avenue. The older speak to the younger. They tell them the ways of God. And the teacher says to these younger people, your life's a gift from God to be enjoyed. And verse 9, he gives them some advice that if you read it at first glance, if you're a parent in this room, you would go, shut up, teacher, don't say that. You're opening a can of worms. Verse 9, follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. It's sort of the lyrics you could imagine a heroine in a Disney movie singing to the world, or a West End musical. Just follow your heart. Do whatever your eyes can see to do. And we kind of go, teacher, shut up. Don't tell kids that. Don't tell young people that. But very simply, the teacher is urging his younger readers, rejoice in the goodness of life. Enjoy God's creation. Life is a gift from God to be enjoyed. He doesn't allow us to say, well, joy in life, that's kind of an optional extra. Or if you're really wise, you're not that bothered by that. Or you look down on people who want to enjoy life. Actually, no, he says joy is a serious business. The teacher says enjoy life whenever you can, even though it's fleeting, because enjoyment is a gift from God. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. And again, verse 9 carries on. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Now, there's a sense in which that second couplet sort of helps us understand a bit more. The first one, it sort of acts as a warning to the teacher's younger readers. Enjoy God's good gifts, but don't abuse them. Don't start worshiping them. Don't put your trust in them. Live life to the full, but not in ways that lead you to sin. It's an important warning here. But I believe it's also mentioning God's judgment is also to act as a spur to us. Life is short. Therefore, make the most of your life. Your life is a gift from God to be enjoyed in relationship with him. So get out there and start living for him, says the teacher. Start enjoying his gifts. One writer puts it like this, enjoyment is not only permitted in God's word, it is commanded. It's precisely when we enjoy the world God has made that we show we've grasped something of the goodness of the God who made it. Teacher says, grab God's gift of life with both hands. because it is evidence of God's goodness to you. Embrace life with everything that you are. And in that sense, actually, we can hear echoes, glimmers of the later words of Jesus in the New Testament. When Jesus says, what is at the heart of life is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus calls us to wholehearted living here. Love God with everything you have. Love your neighbor as if they were your very self. Don't be half-hearted. Don't be sort of non-committal. Love because you've received love from God. Love him and love your neighbor. And in this, actually, the teacher was a great disciple of Jesus, even though he didn't know it. He says, use everything you have to remember God and enjoy his gifts. Verse 10, so then banish anxiety from your heart. You see, what he's saying there is don't let the fact that life is short result in life feeling like a misery. Actually, no, your life's a gift. And the fact that you're here is because God wants you here. He wants you to remember him and to live in right relationship with him. So rejoice in that gift. Receive that gift with thanksgiving. And verse 10, cast off the troubles of your body. Again, this links in with things we saw a few weeks ago. The teacher actually says, just look after yourself. Look after your body. Take care of it. It's your body. It's a gift from God. Our bodies aren't perfect. There are many parts of our bodies, I'm sure, in the morning we would gladly change for something better. But actually, no, God, the teacher says, your bodies are a gift. So banish the troubles of your body and enjoy your body for as long as you can. See, everything about you matters to God, says the teacher. Your heart and your body, your soul, your mind, your strength. So live life to the full as you remember God. It's advice for younger believers here, but it's advice for all of us, actually. And we might think, well, what does it mean to enjoy life as a gift from God? Well, actually, Dan sent me a blog post last week that really helped me in this about how God's gifts sort of can lead us to sort of a deeper worship of God. I'll just read this out for us. And here's how the blog post puts it. Because in one sense, we sometimes think maybe to enjoy life as a gift, we've got to over-spiritualize everything. We've got to pause every few minutes to open the Bible or to pray. But actually, here's what this writer puts it. He says, we should see God's gifts in creation as windows into his glory and opportunities to praise him. But we should also find pleasure in them as gifts. We should thank God for our day in the lake, but we don't need to say, praise you, Jesus, every 5 minutes. We should thank God for our daily bread, but it's okay to focus on the flavors of our sandwich while we're eating it. The more we enjoy God's gifts for their own sake, the more we can appreciate him and thank him for them and love him with them. Where will you enjoy God's creation today? Thank God for the privilege of being human and of being here. Then go and have some fun. Again, I think it's an amazing invitation here. And I hope we've seen throughout this book, the teacher nowhere hides from the brokenness and the fallenness of life in this world. It's not going to be 100% fun. Remember, there will be days of darkness. But the teacher urges his younger readers here, live life to the full. Your life is a gift from God to be enjoyed. And part of your worship of him is to enjoy the gifts that he gives us. So second half of chapter 11, your life is a gift from God to be enjoyed. And then we move on to chapter 12. And again, I hope you saw when this was being read. This is powerful stuff. It's actually a very moving poem that seeks to capture something of what it feels like to grow older. I know of one older Christian man who says he can't read these words now without crying, actually, the older he gets. But this sort of deals with the fact that most of us will grow old, and for most of us, growing old in a fallen world will involve loss and grief. In chapter 12, the teacher wants us to see something. Live long enough, and you will outlive many people that you love. Live long enough, and you'll outlive the things in this world that you thought would save and satisfy you, whether that's knowledge or pleasure or success or money or even physical fitness, physical beauty. See, live long enough, the teacher says, and you'll see that none of those things can really save or satisfy us. Remember God, live life to the full, because the teacher finishes in chapter 12. Your life will end one day. Again, looking at these verses, I think it's fairly safe to assume that the teacher knows something personally of what he's writing about. He's talking to younger readers, but he himself knows something of what aging is about. And he really wants these younger people to go, please learn wisdom, he says. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Get to know God as early as you can, he says. Put your trust in him as early as you can. Don't put off that until tomorrow. I'll do that later. I'll do that in a few years' time. I'll do that even on my deathbed, just before the end. Because the teacher says, when the days are going to come, when the darkness of death will begin to overshadow you, and if you have not learnt to trust in God before that time, old age will only bring you pain and grief. Pain and grief will come anyway, but do you want that to face that on your own, or do you want to face that knowing the good and loving God who gave you life? And the teacher urges these young people to do that because he knows when you're young, it feels like you're young forever. You can stand up very quickly during an all-age slot and it doesn't hurt. But the teacher warns us here, time has a tendency to fly by. And if you're not careful, you will barely know your Creator if you don't prioritize knowing him now. And a great quote I read this week from Terry Pratchett, the writer, inside every old person is a young person wondering what happened. It's true. I think I was interviewed at the beginning of the term saying, when did I meet Lily? I said, oh yeah, it was 10 years ago, whatever. And someone said, no. It's 20? 20 years ago. We were children. But yeah, what happened? Teacher says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, because they're just going to go like that. And what follows is this powerful description of the aging process, and the teacher refuses to pull his punches. Again, if you want the teacher to be nice to you, you should have known by now he doesn't do that. Verse 2, first of all, growing old is like the unmaking of creation. Look down at verse 2 there of chapter 12. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark, and the clouds return after the rain. In the book of Genesis, God created the sun and the light, the moon and the stars, and they were signs of life in all its beauty. And here, verse 2, they just begin to grow dark as the end approaches. Life itself is retreating from view here. And then the teacher tells us, growing old means we can no longer rely on our own strength. That verses 3 to 5. These verses describe this great house, a great house in decline here. And the description we learn that sort of old age and death will come to us all. So if you look at the different groups, the keepers of the house, verse 3, that's probably male servants whose job it is to protect the house. The strong men, that's probably men of high social status, men who are respected and feared by others. The grinders, this reference, that's probably a reference to female servants whose job is to grind corn into flour. Those looking through the windows, probably women of high standing, who can afford to be at leisure. Four types of people, men and women, rich and poor, and all of them will grow old, all of them will experience weakness and loss, and all of them will die one day. The keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men stoop. These men whose physical strength has meant so much to them, it is no longer there. The grinders cease because they're few. It's hard to keep going when your colleagues, your friends are no longer here. Those looking through the windows grow dim. That could be a reference to failing eyesight in old age, but also it's quite moving. It's those looking through the windows themselves are growing dim. It's like they themselves are beginning to fade from view. It's a powerful picture of aging. In verse 4, he says, people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint. My dad just doesn't sleep anymore. He's 81. He just wanders the house. He dozes in the day, and he can't hear bird song, but it seems to wake him up. It's this weird thing in verse 4. Verse 5, when people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred, then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about the streets. And the teacher, he's writing to young people. He says, once there was life, there was strength, there was vigor. This grasshopper's leaping, and now it's dragging itself along. It's just weariness followed by the grave. And another quote I read this week from Betty Davis, one of the great Hollywood actresses of the 20th century. Old age ain't no place for sissies, she used to embroider on cushions. But again, it's true. The teacher would agree with her. It takes courage to grow old. It's not for the faint-hearted. And verse 6, the teacher breaks off and he urges, remember him. It's like this little shout in the middle of all this. Remember him. There's real urgency here. And then he goes on to describe both the preciousness and the fragility of life. The teacher insists here, as he does all the way through Ecclesiastes, life is precious. It's a silver cord, a golden bowl. It's made of precious things, but it's also fragile. And it breaks so quickly. It's quickly severed, broken, shattered. It's a breath, he says in verse 8. So he urges us, remember your Creator. Remember God while there is still time. It's a powerful finale to the teacher's words. And next week, we're going to look at the last bit of chapter 12 at the conclusion of this book. But as we come to a close, what does this passage, chapter 11 and 12, teach us about wisdom and living well in this world? A few things just as we finish. First thing I think it teaches is this: remember God in all the different seasons of your life. In the days of your youth, chapter 11, and the days of your old age, chapter 12. Again, I don't know how you self-identify, if you're young, old, middle-aged. But again, chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes tells us there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. We all go through different seasons in our lives, and each of those seasons will bring with it different joys and different temptations. Will we remember God in all of that? So a young person may make life all about the things around them, chapter 11, verse 9. Whatever your eyes see, to the point where they begin to forget their Creator. They begin to forget that God's the one who's given them those things. They begin to imagine they're going to live forever. And what does the teacher say to them? Remember your Creator. Put your trust in Him, not in your own strength. Depend on Him, not on yourself. Thank Him for His gifts and trust Him for your future. But then an older person could respond to their advancing years with just grief and sorrow, 12 verse 1. I find no pleasure in them. They struggle to see the goodness of God anymore, to praise or trust Him. The teacher's words, remember your Creator. Put your trust in Him. Depend on Him for every day there is to come. Thank Him for His gifts and trust Him for your future. And between those two poles, there are so many different seasons in life, different joys and temptations that face us at different times. People in this room may be struggling with the experience of singleness or the experience of being married, with ill health, with confusion about the future, with guilt over the past, with young children, teenage children, adult children, aging parents. There are so many different seasons in life. The teacher says, remember God in all of them. Trust in Him. Depend on Him. He alone is able to keep you. And He alone will prove His love for you to the very end of your life if you put your hand in His. Second thing that sort of stands out from this, I think honor, love, and pray for older friends and family members. That includes church family members. Because again, look at chapter 12, growing old is not easy. And our culture is terrible at honoring older people. We worship, we're obsessed with youth and beauty. But actually, old age can be a time of real loss and weakness and loneliness. So as a church family, will we honor the older members among us? Will we pray for them? Will we love them? Will we listen to them? Because we're all growing older. And Jesus commands us, love your neighbor as you love yourself. How do we want to be supported and cared for in advancing years? Love, honor, pray for the people you know who are older than you. And finally, the overall message of this section, one of the big things of the book, remember God and live life to the full. Make the most of your life. You do not know how long you have. So recognize God as the great giver of every good thing and allow his gifts to act as signposts to his grace and love towards you. Again, the teacher here, he wants us to live joyfully, but he wants that joy anchored in reality. He doesn't want it based on illusion or imagining things are fine when actually they're very difficult. Life is short, he says. None of us will live forever. A good number of us will experience loss and pain in our lives, but make the most of your life with everything that you have. Love God with everything that you are, and love your neighbor as yourself. Again, the words of Jesus, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." That's remember God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. Love your neighbor as yourself, because life is short. So live it well. Learn what it means to love people around you, to love the God who made you, and learn what it means to actually be loved by him. As you trust in him, as you realize you cannot depend on your own strength, your own skill, your own beauty, you need the living God.